Remember the good old days before Microsoft Word had autosave? You'd type up some important document and then your computer would freeze and you'd lose hours of work just because you forgot to hit save? Well, that's what it's like going online without ExpressVPN. Every time you're connected to an unencrypted network, whether it's in an airport, a hotel, a cafe, or anywhere, your online data is not secure. Any person on that same network who knows what they're doing can gain access to your personal data. Bank logins, credit card details, passwords, all the stuff you don't want people seeing. Unfortunately, hacking has become much easier than it used to be. People don't even have to be exceptionally skilled to do it, and there's a lot of money to be made by selling your information on the dark web. ExpressVPN stops hackers from stealing your data by creating a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet. It's incredibly easy to use. Once the app is running, you literally click one button to get protected. And it works on your phone, laptop, tablet, and more, so you can stay protected on the go. I've been using ExpressVPN for a little while now, and I can rest easy knowing my info is safe and secure. I've heard horror stories of people who've been hacked, and it sounds like a massive pain to try to get any resolution in the aftermath, so I am not interested in finding out what that process is like. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/film. That's expressvpn.com/film. And you can get an extra 3 months free. expressvpn.com/film. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. This year has gone by incredibly quickly, but it's always nice to pause and take stock. What's something you're proud of in 2024 so far? What's something you still want to accomplish this year? I know I'm guilty of falling into a routine and not always thinking about the bigger picture. But as the great Ferris Bueller once said, life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you can miss it. So it's crucial to take a moment to celebrate your wins and make adjustments for the rest of the year. Therapy can help you contextualize your progress and set achievable goals for the next 6 months. As you surely know by now, it's not only for people who have experienced major trauma. Therapy is helpful in all kinds of ways, including learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. If you've been considering trying therapy, check out BetterHelp. It's fully online and was specifically designed to be flexible and customizable to your schedule. To get started, just fill out a brief questionnaire that matches you up with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Take a moment. Visit betterhelp.com/filmdaily today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/filmdaily.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for October 3rd, 2017. On today's show, we're going to be talking about Vince McMahon biopic casting rumors, Tandy Newton's Han Solo character possibly revealed, how Shaft may be the turning point for Netflix distribution models, the longevity of Stranger Things, and Luc Besson's Lucy 2. And in the water cooler, we'll be talking about a variety of movies, The Magic Castle, and Moving. Joining me on today's podcast, Slash Film senior writer, Ben Pearson.
Hey, what's up?
And Slash Film managing editor, Jacob Hall.
Hello, hello.
So guys, it is Monday. We had a weekend.
Some of you did.
what were you up to? You've been moving, right?
Oh, I've been moving. If you follow me on Twitter, you've heard me complain about this a lot. But the short version is that the closing date for my new house got pushed till mid-October, but I had to be out of my apartment at the end of September. So everything I own is currently in storage while I crash in my mom's house with my wife. So it's a thing. Like I'm not homeless. I'm not in trouble. This is such a first world problem to be having. I'm still getting a house in a few weeks. But it's been a very frustrating couple of days as I realize I'm in limbo between homes, which means that I'm essentially living a bit of a skeleton life when it comes to entertainment and all the things I usually write and have fun doing. Is like, I'm in a weird position, you know, just today, my wife and I were like, let's rewatch Blade Runner with Blade Runner 2049 coming out. Our Blade Runner Blu-ray is in a storage unit in Austin, Texas. So we said, let's go rent Blade Runner. It's $15 on iTunes, and I couldn't find it anywhere else. And it's just, then I start realizing, oh, life is weird when I don't have access to all the things I bought to reinforce my bad habits and hobbies.
So what are you doing? Do they have cable? Is there anything for you to do?
Well, I brought my Nintendo Switch. So I've been playing Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle, which is one hell of a thing. I'm enjoying that. I brought a handful of books. I ran to a used bookstore. I just read Neil Gabler's Walt Disney biography. I'm almost done with The Disaster Artist, the book about the making of The Room. And I have Sleeping Beauty, Stephen King and Owen King's new novel. as well as a book called The Attica Prison Uprising. So I have my books lined up for a few weeks. But you start to realize that it's really hard to go watch Blade Runner in the week before 2049 comes out, because I don't want to spend $15 on Blu-ray on a digital version of a movie I already own. So right now I'm kicking myself about, what do I do to rewatch Blade Runner before Friday?
There's nowhere you can rent that for less.
That's what I'm trying to figure out, because you guys want to get into my new show, my incredibly boring life right now. We brought our Apple TV, so maybe it's available on Amazon to stream or to rent. But our Apple TV doesn't give us access to Amazon right now, because Apple and Amazon aren't friends. So it's just a case where either we watch it on my computer, which is not the way to watch Blade Runner, or we pay $15 in iTunes.
Here's a tip, Jacob. While Amazon and Apple are not friends, you can download the Amazon video app for your phone, and you can actually Airstream it to your Apple TV.
This is actually a very good idea.
Yes, I've done this many times. It's not the best, because I think you got to leave your phone on, and that means that you can't go away from that screen to look stuff up or answer a text message while the movie is playing. So basically what I'm saying is you're back into the 1970s and 80s of watching movies, because you got to actually pay attention to it. But it's possible, and it looks good. It doesn't look bad.
Cool. I'll look into that. I know it's just such a weird thing to complain about. I realize I was being really whiny on Twitter. I'm having such a series of first world problems right now. I have family who loves me enough to put me up. I have a house. I have, I have a Apple TV that still has access to many, many movies that I should want to watch.
You just got to go to a film festival and see many movies that people aren't going to see for months, if not a year.
A little blessed life, Peter Shredda. Things are good, damn it.
Okay. I'll talk about what I've been doing, because when I recorded the podcast with you, Jacob, last week, we came across, or we mentioned the movie The American Scream by Michael Paul Stevenson, because you were mentioning another movie on these horror mazes and events. What was that movie?
Haunters, The Art of the Scare.
Yes. And that made me want to rewatch that, because my girlfriend Kitri had never seen it. So I showed her that. She loved it. This movie, for anybody who hasn't watched it, I think it's available on iTunes to rent for very cheap, is about a bunch of it's about in this town in Massachusetts. There's a bunch of people that basically for Halloween create their own haunted houses in their backyards. And there's these elaborate, they spend all year building these haunted houses just for one night for, the neighborhood to experience. And, some of them are a lot more elaborate than others. It's one of those documentaries kind of Trekkies, where the characters are what's more interesting about it than maybe the story. It's very quirky characters. It's very enjoyable. And after I showed her that, she had admitted that she had never seen Best Worst Movie, which is Michael Paul Stevenson's other documentary. And if you don't know, Michael Paul Stevenson was a child actor. He starred in the movie Troll 2, which had been notoriously the worst movie of all time. I think probably The Room has maybe unseated that lately. I don't know. But it's a movie called Troll 2 that actually isn't a sequel to Troll 1, but, was written as a it's a crazy story of how that movie got made. The documentary kind of follows the resurgence of that movie. It kind of become a cult hit. People would watch it for fun. And at the center of this is this dentist who lives in the small town that starred in this movie and, wanted to be an actor but became a dentist instead. And all these years later is, kind of feeling a bit of 15 minutes of fame and going on these tours. And it's kind of the ups and downs of that. And it's a very good arc that couldn't have been written better if it was a fictional narrative film. And if you have not seen that and you love movies, and if those things, I mean, if you're listening to this podcast and you haven't seen that, watch Best Worst Movie. And if you haven't seen The American Scream, I highly recommend it. The other movie I want to talk about, Jacob has already talked about, that is Gerald's Game, which is now on Netflix. It is an adaptation of the Stephen King novel, which I had never read, didn't know anything about. It's kind of a movie that takes place mostly in one location with, I want to say, like two people, two or three people, something like that.
Give an exact number would be a spoiler, so let's leave it there.
Okay, yeah, two or three people, a handful of people. It's very enjoyable. I just don't want like people to go into this thinking it's going to be kind of a sprawling movie. You know, this is a movie that takes place in one location, and it's kind of like one of those very contained, you know, almost like Misery, I guess. Very enjoyable. I loved it. Yeah, I can't say more about it without ruining anything. So,
I appreciate as somebody who hasn't seen it yet and is looking forward to it, I appreciate the hesitance to ruin anything.
Yes. I do want to say, I do want to add one thing.
Also, do not watch when you go on Netflix and you highlight the movies. It starts playing like this trailer for the movies. I'm not sure if you've seen that. So if you highlight this in the first like I want to say 15 seconds of that trailer, it gives away kind of like the hook of the movie, which I would say you know so. Highlight it and click it right away before, you know, Netflix ruins it for you.
I do want to add one thing about this since I've watched it again since we talked about it after Fantastic Fest, Peter, which is I showed it to my wife. And there's a scene that she screamed during it and kept on screaming and kept on screaming and screamed for about 2 minutes straight until we had to pause it. Then if you read our interview with Mike Flanagan, the director that went on Slash Film today, from Fred Topol, our TV writer who often this film review interviews with us as well. He said that there was somebody who actually fainted at the film's premiere at Fantastic Fest and had to call an ambulance. So this is a scene people are going to be talking about. So don't let it be spoiled for you. Go see this movie or go stream this movie before you hear what it's about. Yeah.
My girlfriend was so freaked out. It's very enjoyable. Watch it with your significant other and you know, with the lights out at, you know, in the dark. It's a fun movie. Ben, what have you been up to? It was your birthday weekend.
Yes. Friday was my birthday, and I actually got to hang out with you, Peter. My wife and my friend Patrick met you and Kitra at the Magic Castle, so that was a cool thing. It's, you know, hearing you talk about the Magic Castle has made me want to go. For anybody who doesn't really know what that is, you clearly haven't been listening to this podcast because Peter's talked about it a lot since becoming a member, but it's basically a private club for magicians. And we saw all sorts of performances, you know, ranging from like close-up card magic to, you know, cups and balls and stuff. And then there were big stage shows. There was a juggler who was on like a, I don't know, like a 5.5-foot unicycle juggling loaves of bread under his own legs while riding this thing. It was insane. So, you know, they did the standard girl gets cut in half kind of trick. But yeah, I think the close-up stuff was the things that Peter and I both sort of appreciated a little bit more than the large scale stage performance aspect. But it was a ton of fun. And actually, Peter himself performed a little bit for us off in a little corner. So that was really cool. So thanks again for taking us, Peter. It was great.
I was very jealous of that, by the way, watching you guys hanging out at the Magic Castle on Twitter. I was like, I want to go.
Jacob, come to California. We will go to the Magic Castle. We'll go to Disneyland. We'll go to Disney California Adventure. We'll go to Universal.
Oh,
we'll make a weekend.
You guys would have a blast.
Yes. Well, Ben, thanks for coming with me. And anytime you want to go back, let me know. We don't have to go for dinner. It doesn't have to be that expensive. but it is a fun time. And thanks for watching some of my magic. It's a work in progress. But yeah, let's go on to the news. First in the news, there is a feature film being developed based on WWE chairman Vince McMahon's life. And rumor has it that Bradley Cooper has been offered the role of Vince McMahon. Ben, you wrote this up for the site. What do we know?
Yes, Crazy Stupid Love and Focus directors Glenn Ficarra and John Rickwa are currently developing a movie called Pandemonium, which is a biopic of Vince McMahon. If you know anything about wrestling, it's probably because of him. He is almost single-handedly the guy who basically turned wrestling from a sort of a very small-scale regional sport into a united, massive entertainment behemoth that it is today. You would not really know who Hulk Hogan is if it wasn't for Vince McMahon. He's one of the sort of he's like the Stan Lee of wrestling, maybe. That's kind of the closest analogy I can think of. So
that's
yeah,
about right.
A movie about Vince McMahon is being made, and Bradley Cooper, apparently, according to a professional wrestling website, received an offer to play McMahon. And I think we were talking a little bit about this in our Slash Film Slack channel. I think Bradley Cooper is actually a sort of inspired casting for this. He has the sort of slick hair and the sort of almost skeezy personality that McMahon puts on as his public persona. So that would be kind of a cool thing. It's not, you know, this is a rumor at this stage. We got to take it with the requisite grains of salt. We're not sure what the whole thing, you know, how exactly it's going to play out. But I like the idea. And McMahon, if you don't know, I mean, this guy is like a brash sort of larger than life personality who often gets in the ring and wrestles himself. I mean, he's like as much of a public figure in the WWE as any of the actual wrestlers that the league is built around. So, Peter, as somebody who, you know, used to be a big wrestling fan, what do you think about this?
I think Vince McMahon's life is very fascinating. It's almost one of those things that if you see a narrative film based on it, it might almost seem almost like Narcos, like too large for life. It seems like almost ridiculous, some of the things that happen in that story. My worry is that, you know, this being produced with WWE, that it will kind of be glossy and kind of you know, not tell the full truth on some things. But I'm interested in seeing it. I honestly would love to see a documentary by like someone like Ken Burns that would, if WWE would give him the full access to the, you know, the wrestling archive of the WWE network, I would love to see him put something together, you know, like a large scale mini series kind of on the whole rise of wrestling. But
is something, it's the ESPN 30 for 30 films. They actually produced a documentary fairly recently called This Was the XFL. And Vince McMahon, while he's best known for wrestling, also tried to kickstart a short-lived football league called the XFL. I think that was in the early 2000s or late 90s. And that documentary is really good. It sort of touches a little bit on McMahon's history, but it does give you a great insight into what sort of personality he is and the kind of media savvy guy that he is. So if you're interested in him and you haven't seen This Was the XFL, check that out on ESPN.
Yeah, I actually saw that, and that is very good. I'm not sure if that's available online, but if you can seek that out, definitely watch that. Also in the news, Ron Howard tweeted a photo from the set of Han Solo, and that might have given us some clues about Handy Newton's character in the upcoming Star Wars standalone story. Jacob, you wrote up this article that's turned into kind of a mini feature on SlashFilm.com. What do we know?
Well, what we know, the bare bones facts, is that Ron Howard likes sharing photos from the set of Han Solo. He does it often. They usually have fun captions. They usually have like cheeky descriptions, Star Wars references, a lot of stuff that manages to be fun without revealing a lot. He's very, like James Gunn, I feel like Ron Howard's very good at using Twitter to get people excited without saying much. But he took a photo with Tandy Newton, who, if you're listening, she's the English actress, recently an Emmy nominee for her work in Westworld, where she played Maeve. And we knew she was cast in Han Solo. We didn't know who she was. And she's recently returned to the set for reshoots. And Ron Howard posed with her in this very sweet photo. They look like they're having a great time. It's a nice picture. But she looked at Ron Howard's right hand, and he's covering up her shoulder. And over the edge of his hand is a familiar black and white patch, which is the symbol for the Galactic Empire. It looks, for those of you who don't know what I'm saying, it kind of looks like a black and white cog almost. If you've seen Star Wars, you will recognize it when you see it. And you look at, she's wearing this Imperial patch on her shoulder in sort of a baggy black suit or outfit of some kind. So as I dug into this little photo and tried to extrapolate as much as I could, first I tried to figure out, okay, either this character she's playing is participating in the long Star Wars history of good guys dressing up as bad guys to get behind enemy lines and wreck things, as seen in the original Star Wars, Rogue One, and in stuff we know about Last Jedi. We've seen images from the reel they showed a couple months ago that show Finn and Rose in Imperial disguises. So she could be a good guy, just dressed up, but I'm going to assume she's not, because she has a posh British accent, and everybody knows all good Imperial villains have posh British accents. So I said maybe she's an Imperial officer of some kind, but her clothes, which you can see, are very baggy. And they're not like the tightly formed Nazi-ish outfits you see from all Imperial officers. But what it does look like is a flight suit, something that she would wear the gear of a TIE fighter pilot over. So I'm wondering, and I say this in the article, and I could be completely wrong, is it just me having fun and trying to figure out a little too much on a slow news day, is Tandy Newton playing an Imperial TIE fighter pilot, possibly maybe an ace fighter pilot, maybe somebody who Han Solo, this reckless, skilled pilot, can face down in space or in the sky? Which brings me to, is she playing an established character from Star Wars canon, or is she playing a new character? And this was a few years ago, I would have said new character, but with Saw Gerrera making the jump from the animated shows to live action, I'm willing to consider that maybe there is a connection here already. And there are two characters who she could be playing who exist in the Star Wars universe already. There is Rey Sloane, who is an Imperial Admiral during the events of Return of the Jedi. And she figures into the Aftermath trilogy of novels, where she helps the Imperial fleet come back together after Return of the Jedi for its last stand against the Rebel Alliance. She helps form the First Order. And she's the right age. Tandy Newton's 44, which means that in the 10 years or so, or however many years that happened between Han Solo and the original trilogy, she could age up to become an admiral, somebody who is no longer a pilot, somebody who is pulling the strings and actually in charge of things. The other possibility, also, it should be mentioned that Rey Sloane has always been depicted in fan art and on the page as a woman of color, a black woman. So it makes sense on that level. And there also is another black Imperial pilot, black Imperial female pilot in Star Wars lore, who is a Sienna Ree, who is a character introduced in the novel Lost Stars. However, she's in her 20s during the events of the Galactic Civil War in the original trilogy. So while it is another black female TIE fighter pilot, I do think that if she is an established character, you're seeing a young Rey Sloane before she was commanding Star Destroyers, back when she was maybe piloting TIE fighters. So, Peter and Ben, am I crazy or does this make sense?
I mean, I think you did a tremendous amount of guesswork based on a sliver of a shoulder patch, but it actually does make a lot of sense. So I am impressed. I bow down to you, sir.
See, this is my favorite thing about Star Wars is the big lengths that we will go to try to extrapolate information from the littlest possible things because we love it so much. It should also be mentioned that in the Legends backstory for Han Solo, he, you know, started as an Imperial pilot, and he kind of left that life to become a smuggler. It's been rumored that the bad guy in this upcoming film is Woody Harrelson's character, who might start as his kind of mentor. So I'm wondering how the Imperial fit into this story. Are they just at the beginning of the story with, you know, Han being part of the Empire, or do they serve as adversaries later on? But it definitely seems that this confirms, at very least, that they do have a role in this movie.
Mm. Yeah. I'm hoping that it's not just I hope the Empire has a big role here, but I also hope that we get a lot of criminal enemies as well. Because you imagine, I love the idea of young Han Solo being torn between the criminal underworld that wants him dead and the Empire who wants him dead. I think everybody should want Han Solo dead. That's my favorite Han Solo, the one who everybody wants dead. So.
You're right. And I think it's a good place for these standalone films to kind of make someone else the villain. The Empire doesn't always have to be the villain. So I'd like to see more of this crazy, wacky group of bounty hunters after him as well. Moving on, the new Shaft movie, which I don't think any of us were really looking forward to, may become the turning point for Netflix's distribution model Ben, you wrote this up for the site. What do we know?
Yes, traditionally Netflix has been fairly insistent on day and date releases, which means that when one of their movies becomes available in theaters, on the rare case that Netflix actually puts something in theaters, it also becomes available on the streaming service at the same time. This has proven to be sort of problematic for a lot of theater owners who don't, you know, they prefer exclusive theatrical windows of movies. They don't like it when things are simultaneously available on streaming services. Amazon, meanwhile, has been sort of taking a different approach where they essentially put movies in theaters for a while and then put them on Amazon Prime streaming service. So it's sort of a fundamental difference in strategy. But now there is a new deal that centers around this Shaft movie, which I think we know is called Son of Shaft, which actually stars Richard Roundtree, Samuel L. Jackson, and Jesse T. Usher as three generations of Shaft family members, basically butting heads over old school versus new school interpretations of crime solving methodologies. And Tim Story is directing this movie. Right now, Deadline just reported that there is a deal that is almost closed between Netflix and New Line Cinema for the rights to this Shaft movie. And according to the terms of this deal, Netflix is going to, quote, pay more than half of the film's high $30 million budget in exchange for international rights and the ability to put the film on its streaming service outside the U.S. 2 weeks after New Line releases the movie theatrically in the United States. So that's a big change for Netflix. That's a big deal because the movie is going to, as far as American audiences know, it will just be business as usual. This movie is going to come out in theaters. It's going to transition from a theatrical release to VOD and home video under the Warner Brothers marketing team the same way that any other Warner Brothers movie would. But for people outside of the U.S., this movie will be available 2 weeks after it hits theaters, and that's a big deal because movies that are aimed at Black audiences, primarily Black audiences, tend to not really perform that well overseas. They obviously, there are big instances like Girls Trip this year that prove that there are, you know, there's definitely the potential for like massive hits for movies that are aimed specifically at that little served, underserved demographic. But typically, that doesn't always translate to international success. So under this deal, Netflix will be able to let the rest of the world sort of feel like they're participating in the cultural conversation around a movie like this that happens to, you know, that has the potential to hit big in the United States. And I think it's a big change. It's a big deal. What do you guys think about this?
It is a big deal because it does show that Netflix is willing to, you know, work a little bit with this model. And it does show that, like, a movie like, I guess, Deadline here is saying, you know, genre movies could, you know, take advantage of this because, you know, a movie that would normally only be made for, you know, $15, $20 million might get, you know, an extra $10 million from Netflix to have the distribution internationally go, you know, 2 weeks after the release date in the U.S. That seems like a win-win for us. I just don't I still want the day and date. Like I still, you know, as much as I love the home, the movie going experience, I think you give consumers what they want and they are going to choose the way they want to see it. And I think holding it back, I don't know. I'm just with them. Jacob, how about you?
I think this is a really interesting idea. Unlike you, Peter, I'm not sure how I feel about day and date because I value going to the movies so much that I'm afraid that that's step one into killing it completely. So it's just something I'm very torn about because I think this is something that's going to be good for audiences, good for studios, good for Netflix. And I think for the right movies, it's going to be a interesting step. I do remember how, I guess close to a decade ago, Steven Spielberg was asked about the future movie theaters and described a scenario where people pay Broadway price tickets in order to go see the biggest, most expensive movies, and only those in theaters, and everything else gets sent elsewhere. And I feel like smaller movies being shuffled off Netflix this quickly is a step toward that. And for some people, it probably sounds great. For a lot of people, it probably sounds like, my theaters stink, people talk, they text. I'd rather watch at home. But as somebody who still values that experience, I'm hesitant. But at the same time,
but do you really think the experience of going to the movies is that bad that if everybody had the choice to watch the movies at home, they would choose that option?
I think a lot of people would. I'm blessed to be in areas where they have a strong film culture, people who care, with theaters that tend to have high quality projection and sound. But not everybody is. And every time I talk to somebody who's not in New York, LA, or Austin, or Chicago, cities that have options, I hear nightmare stories. Like one of our writers, Vanessa Bogart, she's married to a gentleman in the Army. And they have relocated to a state that is not one you talk about very often. I don't want to give away her location. And she stopped going to the movies. The reason why she writes about a lot of television for Slash Film is because she doesn't go to the movies. She waits till it's at home because going to the local theater is such a nightmare that she waits. So I keep that in perspective whenever I talk about going to the movies, because not everybody's lucky to have theaters that and audiences that care.
I seem to think that it's going to go the way that Spielberg predicted, but I think it's going to be a variable pricing. It's going to be, you know, you want to see the big budget Marvel movie, you're going to pay $20 to see it. If you want to go see this Netflix movie that's going to be on Netflix the same day, you pay, you know, $7 to see it. Do you know what I mean? I think that's the future of the cinema experience, but maybe I'm being hopelessly optimistic that people would actually pay for something that they could get in their homes.
We'll see.
Yes. Moving on from that to another Netflix property, that is Stranger Things. The Duffer brothers have been saying that they have a vision for 4 seasons of this story, so that this would go up until Stranger Things season 4, or Stranger Things 4, I guess they would probably call it, right? Sean Levy, the producer, has come out talking to Entertainment Weekly saying, quote, "Hearts were heard breaking in Netflix headquarters when the brothers made 4 seasons sound like an official end. And I was suddenly getting phone calls from our actors' agents. The truth is we're definitely going 4 seasons, and there's very much the possibility of a 5th. Beyond that, it becomes, I think, very unlikely." So it sounds like, you know, it's going to be 4 or 5 seasons, which is something the Duffer brothers said previously. But it is interesting that they kind of are, you know, pointing to the infield and, you know, calling that end so early on. I know Lost did that kind of midway through when they were starting to suffer some problems with longevity of that series. But what do you guys think? Do you think that they should be planning this whole arc out like that? I mean, I kind of admire that they kind of have this plan in mind.
Jacob, any thoughts?
I think TV shows are an organic process. I think long-term planning can sometimes feel like a disaster. Like you write a character and say, this guy is going to be a major character, and it doesn't click, and maybe you're stuck with him. Or vice versa, you create a character who's a supporting role, maybe after 1 or 2 appearances, who's amazing. So you want to have the maneuverability to bring him back in a major way and say, make him a main character. So I guess I'd rather have television be a little sloppy, but organic and flexible, as opposed to rigid and planned to the point where there's no room to let the magic evolve. So the Duffer brothers can go off and say, 4 seasons and we're done, and that's great. That's their plan. But if they're making their show and realize our alchemy is still working, let's keep this going, you know, I say go for it. I don't want to force an artist in into a box. So honestly, my ultimate end of the day opinion is I have no opinion. Let them make the show. See how it works.
Yeah, you bring up some good points. I think overall, like in the very broadest terms, I do prefer for people to have an idea of what the ending is going to be in advance, just so they have something to shoot for. But yeah, obviously having room for, you know, being able to sort of come up with things on the fly and spontaneity and all that definitely is a huge advantage. I mean, Breaking Bad would not be the show that it was if they stuck to the plan. So So yeah, I hope that they can keep things going, but not outstay their welcome.
Yeah, and there's also the possibility that they could pull an It and, you know, fast forward 10, 15, 20 years into the future of these characters. So if they did hit that endpoint that has been envisioned, they could theoretically still do more Stranger Things with the same characters.
Such a smart idea. That's such a smart idea, Peter. That's going to happen. They ripped off so much of It already by accident. They might as well just go for it.
I almost think it's going to happen in these five seasons at some point, that we're going to start to get flash forwards and, you know, it's going to intertwine. But maybe I'm wrong. We'll see. Moving on. Luc Besson's Lucy 2 is still happening, and it's thanks to Valerian. Jacob, what do we know?
Remember Lucy? Do you guys remember Lucy, that 2014 science fiction movie with Scarlett Johansson?
I remember it made a lot of money. That's all I remember.
It did well. It was
kind of the first on that like era of female driven action films doing really well at the box office and Hollywood being surprised.
It was a scientifically unsound action movie where Scarlett Johansson, due to a special drug, has her brain unlocked to the areas that humans normally can't access, and she gains superpowers and can manipulate reality, and it actually got pretty positive reviews for a movie as dumb as it is. And I know a lot of people who love it. I did not. And we've been hearing about On Up with Lucy 2 since it was a huge hit. And since writer-director Luc Besson has been off making other things. And he recently released Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets, which you discussed in the show before, because it was a huge bomb. Valerian didn't make the money it needed domestically, didn't make the money it needed internationally. People at Europa Corp lost their jobs. Things got reshuffled. And think about Luc Besson founded Europa Corp, the company that produced Valerian. So he's fine. He's always going to have a place to make his movies. But according to most recent news, Lucy 2 is being pushed forward again because it's sort of in their new wheelhouse. Post-Valerian, they're trying to realize maybe our modus operandi going forward shouldn't be $150 million sci-fi spectacles and should be modestly budgeted star vehicles that are built around more modestly budgeted action and smaller stakes and be easier to sell and turn a profit on. So Valerian had to fail for them to start realizing, hey, maybe the thing we did really well before is a template we should go forward. So while I'm not a fan of Lucy, I feel like this is maybe the right fit. I think Luc Besson's always excelled in making these kind of movies like The Fifth Element or like The Professional or Leon, whatever preferred title is, where maybe a little more constrained, a little more stripped down, certainly cheaper, I think, is his element. But I'm curious, are you guys excited for Lucy 2? I know I kind of started off kind of snarky because I feel like the movie's kind of vanished, even though it did really well and made Scarlett Johansson a bankable star. Would people be excited for this?
I also did not like this movie, and thinking about the ending of the film, I can't imagine how they would bring Scarlett Johansson back for Lucy 2. I mean, the movie devolved into such ridiculous nonsense by the time it wrapped up, so maybe if they just keep the nonsense alive, they'll be able to come up with some ridiculous contrived way to get her back in action. But I'm sort of wondering if, like, maybe the sequel will follow a completely different character, or like Morgan Freeman's character or something like that, because if I remember the ending correctly, and I don't necessarily want to spoil it for people who haven't seen the original yet, I just feel like it would be pretty tough to bring her back.
It gets downright 2001 A Space Odyssey in those final 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, I have not seen the movie yet, nor do I expect to ever see the movie at this point. But maybe if there's a sequel actually comes out, I'll be forced to. So I don't really have much of an opinion on Lucy 2. It seems like one of those things that, you know, it had a lot of buzz when it came out. You know, it breaking these box office kind of barriers. And it seemed like one of those movies that they should have jumped on and done the sequel right away. Like, waiting this much time, I think, only hurts it. And I feel like it's setting up for another box office failure for Europa Corp. So,
yeah.
So that is it for today's podcast. Look at that, guys. We're almost near 30 minutes. We're getting there. We're getting closer to our goal. It's only taken us like 2 months. We're trying, though. We're trying. You can find more of all of these stories on slashfilm.com. You can find Ben at Ben Pears on Twitter. You can find Jacob at Jacob S. Hall on Twitter. You can find me at slashfilm on and slashfilm.com. And you can subscribe to this podcast, published every weekday on iTunes, Google Play, Overcast, all the popular podcast apps. Send us your feedback. Send us your questions for the mailbag, peter@slashfilm.com. Please leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention it on the air. Go to iTunes, give us a review, give us a rating. That helps us out quite a bit. Spread the word on social media, Twitter, Facebook, whatever you're using. Tell people about this, because that's how people find out about this podcast, is when you talk about it. And thank you for listening.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.